Murray, hold that. Hold
Yeah, when are my Instagram coming?
How's that?
It's gonna hurt your back.
I don't hold it all the session.
Okay. You ready? You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Testing.
Good. Testing.
Welcome to our Water Preferred podcast.
Hold on a second, man.
Well, we'll get to that. Welcome, my co-host Jimmy Fausen, who I tried to injure during pedal tennis last week.
Mate, great to be here, and I was lucky to get through that.
Yes.
What was that off the top, Aaron?
Well, I was going to actually test our guest, who if he recognises the track. Our guest today is head coach of men's water polo team, Tim Hamill. Welcome to the pod.
Thank you for having me.
You are the current world record holder for Water Polo Fit podcast listens. So we'll see if you can break it today.
I enjoyed the podcast last time and looking forward to chatting again tonight.
It's good. Do you want to intro the guest?
Well, as well as national team head coach, also stalwart of the Balmain Club, played in the national team, was it the Montreal World Championships?
Yes, team? Montreal.
Yeah. And I've also coached... in the AWL, couple of championships now, Tim?
Just one with the West Girls.
West Girls. But also your boss.
Yes, right, my boss. Good boss. Best boss I ever had.
Thank you, mate.
Tim, did you recognise the intro track by any chance?
No.
Okay. For listeners and Jimmy Fausen, that was the track that played at our last World Cup in Montenegro as players were walking out. You don't remember it?
Gotcha. Very good.
Yeah, I actually enjoyed it. Track. We'll probably get barred for it if we're not using it properly. But
so, what I'm hearing is that during the intro, you're focusing on the music and Tim's thinking about what's happening in the game.
So, Tim, how you been?
Really well. Did you tell James about the track you liked most on tour?
I can't remember what my track was.
Montenegrin national team water polo song.
It was very catchy.
Very catchy.
So their song, not their national anthem, they've got an actual...
No, they got, which I actually forgot. But yeah, they have the national team's team song they play during the games and they score a goal. And it was a little bit embarrassing because when we played them and they scored a goal, it's hard not to catch yourself sort of. Singing along. Very catchy song.
So did that come across when he's doing his videoing? Like when he's doing the coding and that kind of thing, could you just like feel the camera moving? Or
there were a couple of games where the filming, the coding wasn't good. So I imagine it was on the back of that.
A few technical difficulties. It was very hot in a pool and a camera overheated a fair few times.
So, Martin, you've often called yourself the CEO of the team, the chief entertainment officer of the national team program. And I'm imagining that as part of that role would be the team song. So have you had some thoughts on if Montenegro's team song you're pretty happy with, have you had some thoughts on what the Sharks could be?
Well, as I understand, it actually was a team song many years ago. I also think the song's not popular anymore because it probably wouldn't fly really well in terms of... wokeness or politically correctness. So, look, I'll dig up to the archive and see if I can change a few words and we'll go from there.
Fair enough. So apart from the Montenegrin team song, how do you think about the team's performance? We're talking about the World Cup. Before we go into sort of, we'll talk a little bit today about the World Cup, preparations for World Championships, a bit of AWL, a bit of other stuff in general. But to start with, can we talk about the World Cup? How did you feel about the team's performance? Was it up to where you kind of wanted to be? Did you get out of it what you wanted to from the tournament? Obviously, Marin gave us a bit of a run through in our last podcast. But from your perspective, how did you feel the team's performance?
Yeah, I probably simply put, I was a bit disappointed with not just the results, but also how we played in some of the critical games. We lost two of the games by one goal, and in both those games, it was the last attack/defence that cost us, and a couple of poor decisions in that. to be truthful, Spain and Greece were much too good for us. We didn't play well in that game, and we lost by Serbia in the opening game by 3 or 4 goals. So at the moment, we're certainly about trying to win as many games as possible. We're also trying to get our foundations right over the next 12 months so we become really competitive in each and every game we play. At the moment, we need to play at our best to be competitive in this type of tournament. And when we're a little bit off our best, we're not up to it at the moment. So we've got a lot of work to do, both individually and as a group. But the group remains extremely positive. By and large, I can't really fault the work ethic of the playing group. But yeah, we've got some work to do.
With that working on individual, obviously you can identify areas for individuals to work on. But how do you work on that team piece in terms of you've got players spread out across the world? How do you as a coaching group manage that side of it?
It's probably our biggest challenge. At the moment, we have a lot of conversations, day in, day out about the team and the program and what we should and shouldn't do. And I enjoy those conversations. They need to continue. But the most important thing and our biggest need at the moment is more international games. Simple as that. And I think sometimes we get carried away with all sorts of different committees and meetings and all sorts of other pieces, which I'm not saying aren't important, but the one thing we need is more games. So it is our challenge, James. What do we do about it is probably the hardest thing to answer. I've tried to increase the amount of communication we have with the players, particularly those overseas, in terms of trying to get them on the same page as how we play here. We're slowly rolling out a playbook, which will have all of our extra man attack and defence and set attack, set defence, counter attack, counter defence, main principles, looping in some videos, examples to all of those, so the players can constantly refresh our systems. And we're also building a pretty big scouting document. I think in the past, one thing we haven't done well is understand the opposition, not just their main themes and trends, but also the individual tendencies. So we're slowly building that. That'll take time because, we've only played Greece once. So we'll build the document based on the previous games, but also their European games. So those things I think will help, but it'll take some time for us.
And with those, for young coaches listening and basically anyone that's interested in it, what do those documents actually look like? Like, is that a PowerPoint document? Is that a live document? Do you insert videos in there? What do they actually look like? And when you're scouting, as a coach, what do you look for and what do you give athletes to think about without overwhelming them?
Two pieces probably make it up. So we'll look at an opposition team and look at their tendencies as a squad, as a team, in terms of offensively or defensively, what are the main things they do, which is pretty standard across all sport. Mm-hmm. In addition to that, we try and look at individual tendencies for players. So I've done it as a PowerPoint presentation at the moment. That format may not be the best one, but it's the best one for me. I'm not a real computer-based person, so it works. It has the opening two slides based on, let's talk about Serbia, what Serbia's themes are, what their trends are, what we're most likely to see against them. And then following that, we'll literally have a slide per player after that, number one, number two, number three, number four, what their strengths are, where they like to shoot, are they someone we'll target offensively or defensively, goalkeeper, where they like to make the most saves, where we might think they're vulnerable. We build that for all players, for each and every team. And then once we know a draw upcoming, like the coming World Championships, then we'll spend more time on that group.
Do you do that for your own team? Like if you've got that for the internationals when you're scouting, do you do a similar thing for your squad so that they can know what you think their strengths, weaknesses are and those kind of things?
Yeah, we have like an individual player feedback form, which we're slowly rolling out across the group. So the players answer 6 questions, very much about self-reflection, self-analysis. Are your current behaviours, conducive to performing well? And 5 other questions similar to that. And then there's 12 attributes that I ask them to rate themselves against on a basic level: shooting, technical, legs, strength, aerobic capacity, repeat sprint ability, for 12. And then so players will give themselves a rating 1 through 4. 1 being you're essentially the best at that in the national squad, and 4 being that attribute is not up to standard. And then I'll actually rate the players as well. And so when we sit down and meet, if James, you've got yourself rated as a number 1 for aerobic fitness, you see the best in the team. and I have you as a three or four, then there's a really simple conversation piece that needs to take place. Mm. Pleasingly, most of the guys rate themselves, you know, quite similarly to what I am. I have them, but yeah, sometimes we're certainly on a different page, and I need to understand why they think they've rated themselves a certain number, and vice versa. And it works both ways too. You know, sometimes a player rate themselves quite poor on a team culture fit or on shooting or on blocking, but some of the metrics, some of the attributes, you know, we can tie them into actual numbers. Yeah.
And I guess on still staying on that sort of trends topic, what, looking at the World Cup and other recent international tournaments, what are some of the international trends that you're seeing? Why are we seeing that, you mentioned off the top, the Spanish and the Greeks being the top teams, like why, what's making them good at the moment as opposed to maybe some of the more traditional, bigger powerhouse countries?
Yeah, it's interesting at the moment, certainly having spent a little bit more time looking and, I guess, analysing some of the opposition at the moment, you know, particularly the Spanish and the Italians play, you know, incredibly fast, you know, and amazing skills, and that's probably the style of game at the moment that's causing us the most problems. Certainly, we certainly don't have the other opposition worked out, but when teams play, I guess, a slower tempo game, they like to get in their six-on-six attack. We are certainly more comfortable, so we need to do a lot of work against the likes of Spain and Italy to get up to speed, literally with the speed how they play. Such a dynamic game, multiple defences. After a goal, they're playing, you know, some sort of M zone variation or some split variation in defence, and they're the things that we need to get better at.
And when you talk about speed, because if you lined up our best 13 against their 13 in a 50 metre swimming race, we'd win that, right?
Yeah, I think we'd still go okay.
So what, when you're talking about speed and them being faster than us, what does that actually mean in water polo terms?
Yeah, so for me, it's not just the ability to swim from, you know, 2 metres to 2 metres on a counter-attack or counter-defence. It's more about speed in between players, the speed of decision-making, the speed of reaction, which really, really we need to get better at. So, yeah, when I talk about speed, it's not literally, you know, a 25-metre sprint, because as I said, we've got some incredibly fast players in our team. But it's the speed of decisions, the speed and the mobility, you know, in certain defences that you know, is causing us a few issues at the moment.
And Maren, what do you do in a strength and conditioning regard to build up that the speed in those areas? I know we've spoken about it a little bit previously, but obviously it's your big focus for you at the moment.
So there's probably two things. One, we just want to build capacity to deal with fatigue. As a famous quote says, fatigue builds the coward of everyone. So the fitter we are, the more capacity we got to deal with fatigue, obviously it would be a bit easier to make the crucial decisions. And then we build out the season to hopefully peak at the right time. So currently leading towards world champs, we are focusing more on explosiveness, more power, just being more athletic. So we can move much quicker, and to Tim's point as well, like not just be able to move from A to B, be able to move fast from A, B, C, D, E. So, yeah, generally trying to, you know, we started with building capacity to deal with fatigue, and now we're just sharpening up a bit to be more explosive, more quicker.
Yeah, probably an extension to that as well, Maren, is Hayden Belshaw, who's come on board in the last 12 months as our swimming coach. It's been really interesting to see how he's programmed the swim sets throughout the last, you know, 12 months. But the big piece for us will be repeat sprint. So our ability for one 25-metre sprint is often excellent, but our second, third, fourth aren't as good. Yeah. So we'll have a real focus physiologically over the next period about repeat sprint, and that's an area that we need to get better at.
And with that repeat sprint, do you do, I know when we used to coach us, we'd do repeat sprints, but we'd sort of wrestling in between. Is that still a focus? Because you've got to be able to sprint, wrestle, be mobile, sprint back and forth multiple times.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that short-sighted games in terms of conditioning and also skill development piece is very important. We'll do a lot more of that. And in addition to the wrestling and swimming, probably the biggest change since we all played was two main things that I see is the amount of leg work that's being done, particularly technical legs. We did a little bit with med balls, but more in a vertical position. So a lot more technical legs, like creeping, blocking, sliding, you know, cross blocking, and also the contact swimming you mentioned before. There's a lot more of that with shooting. Yep. So it might be a, you know, 5, 8, 10 seconds worth of wrestling, 2 shots, and then repeat that through 4 or 6 rounds. So a lot of contact shooting drills, which is, you know, we haven't done a whole lot of recently, but that will be one of the big focuses post-National League, you know, for the next 9 weeks heading to World Champs.
And I guess with seeing some of those trends, what can coaches be doing to improve those? And where do you see, not just in the top level, but across Australian water polo, where our deficiencies kind of are? Obviously, well, I guess what I'm asking is where are young junior coaches not focusing enough time?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably more of a thank you for all the junior coaches for the work they're doing than I won't be critical tonight, because I've been in their position before, and at the moment it's incredibly hard with, you know, so little contact hours with a junior athlete, such limited pool space. So, you know, I might, you know, if I had to pick two, then I'd talk about leg work and technical legs.
Yep.
But the problem is, James, is that, you know, we've got, for some clubs, that, you know, they might only have 60 minutes. Within that 60 minutes, they're trying to do everything.
Yep.
And I've been very guilty of that in the past, and you try and do everything, and as a result of that, you don't get a whole lot done. But, you know, presuming we had time and space, then I'd certainly go down the path of, you know, increased amount of legwork, and that's in all positions, all planes, all different lines. Yeah. And also shooting. You know, I've spoke previously that our focus up to this point has been on blocking, yeah, and that's been our main theme, and we took a little bit of a step back at the World Cup with our blocking numbers. Still better than we were 2 years ago, but something to get better at. But the biggest thing in Australia at the moment is our ability to score goals. So shooting percentage, we continue to be very low in each of the tournaments we play at. So when we're trying to beat the Greeks and the Spanish and the Italians, shooting the way we currently do, you know, we're always going to be up against it. So, you know, juniors-wise, absolute legs and shooting as well. That comes, there's so many different variations to that as well. You know, why do the Hungarians shoot so well? We've spoken about Hungo ball and, you know, things on the land. I know Marin's doing a lot more work in the gym to try and increase our shooting speed and shooting velocity. You know, how many times would a young junior player shoot at maximum speed over a season?
Yeah.
That needs to increase. But also our design of shooting drills to make sure there's an emphasis of actually scoring the goals. I think too often, as I said, I'm as guilty as anyone that a shooting drill takes place, and I don't want to say punishment, but there's no real ramifications or punishment, excuse me, for missing.
Yep.
Ball goes over the top, goalkeeper makes an easy save, miss the frame completely, and, you know, just shoot again. And that's where we just need to change our mindset. Every time that we shoot the ball, you know, we need to want to score. And there's a couple of players who do it really well, and, you know, Tristan Glansning, who's a young Cronulla player who'll feature for Cronulla in these AWL finals, who's also in the Australian junior team heading to World Champs. He made his debut for the Sharks in January against Japan. One thing I love about Tristan is that every time he tries to shoot, he desperately wants to score. From 1 metre, from 6 metres, from 10 metres, from 12 metres, and he loves scoring goals. Yep. And that's what we need to see more of. Absolutely, shooting at the right time and making the right choices, but when you're having a shot, committing to it wholeheartedly, putting in the frame and shooting at maximum speed, and we've really got to shift our shooting percentage if we want to be competitive in 12 months.
And to that, it's a bit similar to swimming, not just be able to shoot really hard from no defenders in front of the goal, bounce off, like, you know, push off the ball, get out the togs and shoot hard. You've got to be able to shoot under pressure, or if defenders are in split, or, you know, in different positions.
Marin talked a little bit about your bromance with other coaches. Which was one that particularly you said, Marin?
Well, I think Montenegrin coach, Vlade. Vlade, what's his last name? Okay. At one stage, we were warming up, getting ready to train with the Montenegrins. And usually before a session, Tim will walk over and, you know, speak to Vlade about what the plan is, what we're going to do, etc. But I remember looking over, and one stage Vlade had no pants on, just, you know, boxer shorts on down, and Tim was there, just, you know, they were just giving a good chat. So I think those two have definitely developed a bit of bromance. And while we're there, our assistant coach Andrew Nitzis, he's probably the worst than Tim. I noticed he really took liking to a Greek coach. Like every time we bumped into them, he was just speechless. It was just like a, you know, that when you had a crush in high school and you see the girl you like, you're just going to lose it all. Andrew was up there as well. So it was actually quite interesting watching those two.
I'll leave you with him. But the interesting part for me was when Elvis left Australia and took up his post at Barceloneta, he sent me through a WhatsApp message with all the coaches' contacts, you know, throughout the world. And so on my phone, you know, as a real water polo nut from a young age, I had like six of the biggest coaches in world water polo, their contact numbers. You know, as an example, Campagna from Italy. And I'm like, well, what do I do with these? You know, I wasn't really sure how I'd be accepted within as a young Australian coach who unknown to many of them. And probably one of the most pleasing things is that they're actually really all generally great people, responding to text messages. Campagna loves an emoji, so he's always sending me emojis back. But yeah, I was pleasantly surprised how well, I guess, I was received in terms of the coaching community and how open they were to communication about training camps, etc. And pleasingly, we'll head to Greece and Italy this coming December. So we picked those two teams and place it deliberately. You know, they've given us a hiding at two recent tournaments, so we need to go and spend time with them. It'll be incredibly difficult, but looking forward to getting over to Europe at the back end of the year as well.
And James, when we go away, usually coaching staff from both teams meet for a dinner. You know, I haven't been invited to any of those dinners yet as well, so hopefully this time around I'll get a start.
Doesn't mean any word of that on the run sheet. But just on that, who are some of the coaches that you do look up to, both water polo and also from other sports?
Yeah, when I was last on the podcast, I spoke a lot about my lack of reading as a young student at school, and over the last 4 or 5 years, I've read, I won't say all the books, but a lot of books and listened to a lot of podcasts from you know, numerous coaches, and I don't really have one that I follow everything about. From a water polo point of view, of constantly watching games, as we sit here right now watching the gold medal game from Tokyo. I've been lucky enough to spend some time with some other sports recently. I think last time I also mentioned about the Roosters and Trent Robinson. So I was lucky enough to visit the Roosters a few weeks ago. So like a lot of people say, I probably picked up bits and pieces from numerous coaches and numerous sports along the way, which I think all you know, shapes the type of player, coach and person you become.
So on that, one of the things that I think be useful to share, Tim, I love and really dislike watching games with you in the stands. I love it because I like looking at your notes. I like how you look at a game and you just pick up things that I just would never pick up. I don't like it because you question me. And every time you question me, I get it wrong. So, but for the coaches, you seem to, you never follow the ball. You seem to always look at the systems, matchups, and you always pick up, you always pick up 3 or 4 plays. And then you question me, oh, who passed the ball? And I'd be like, I don't know. I was watching the ball. I watched Mandy just slam it. But can you share, how do you watch the game for coaches and players?
Yeah, it's a great question. One thing that I made a lot of mistakes of coaching wise, particularly during National League and somewhat recently, was that because I'm so passionate about this team and I hope it's so passionate about our sport and so passionate about this country, that I want the players to do so well. And really, I don't. It's not about me. I would certainly enjoy it if we when we are successful. But I really want this playing group to be successful for them. But I've got to be conscious because I'm so passionate that during games, my passion and my excitement doesn't override how I'm coaching. So I know that when I'm not coaching well, I watch the ball too often and I become a supporter, I become a spectator. And that's when I know I'm not coaching well. So when I'm coaching well, I have a better view of the pool. I don't follow the ball. I'm watching other things, whether it be offensive or defensive, which I think I can contribute to during the game. Water polo is a little bit different because there's some games that you can control certain things during the game, like a basketball coach may be able to do on the side of the court. But there's other games, like in Strasbourg last year and somewhat in Montenegro recently, where the noise is so much that you're screaming your lungs out, but realistically they can't hear you. So I've just got to continue to get better at finding my moments to show the passion and emotion, but also certainly not to be a ball watcher and miss the parts of the game that I can contribute to. At quarter time and half time and three quarter time, for me, it's all about, you know, three things in terms of the talk. I rely very heavily on Andrew Nitsis and Vedran Serkovic as assistant coaches, Vedran defensively, Andrew offensively. And I always ask them before I start talking anything major from you guys, and they'll always give me any, you know, one or two top line points only. I may have already captured that in my own mind or missed it, but either way, we'll then, you know, feed that into the group. But it's, for me, the quarter time is about getting the balance between technical, tactical and emotionally. You know, some talks are pure emotion, whereby the guys haven't started well, like against Greece, where we missed, you know, block early, goalkeeper missed two saves early on, we weren't in the game. And then it's not so much about our tactics, it's not so much about our technique, it's about our emotion, our willingness to play. At other quarter times, it's all about a technical change that you need to make, and other quarter times, tactically. So each quarter time is some balance between those three aspects. I certainly don't get it right all the time, but, yeah, that's something that I'm really conscious of to try and get right, that we're feeding the players the right messages that can make change, you know, for the following quarter.
I also noticed in Montenegro especially, Jimmy and I spoke about how in Europe, the hockey sub rule, the Euros are used as so much better than we do in Australia. But you seem to really pay attention to who's in the corner, the changes of other teams, changes as well. And it seems like you also make your changes according to what the opposition is doing into our systems. Would that be correct? Or
yeah, so firstly with the flying sub rule, there's a couple of countries that do it really well. We haven't seen too many clubs use it a great deal in the National League here, but there may be some examples that over the weekend with the upcoming AWL finals. But a lot of teams will leave their centre forward in that flying sub box as long as possible. So your team scores, centre forward goes and sits as a flying sub. You put in a centre back plus another stronger defender. That strong defender goes one defence, swims to the flying sub, high five with the centre forward, and he comes in. So we're conscious about who that second defender would be, you know, who would be then replacing the centre forward. You know, what do we do with that player if we move them to the other side of the pool? If we make them play centre back, you know, how can we try and get their tactics off skew a little bit by targeting? But certainly some players match up better with other players. So I know that some of our centre backs are better with certain centre forwards. So just making sure that I get those changes as good as possible throughout the game.
And to pump up your tyres a bit, I just don't think people realise how much work goes in behind the scenes, like how much that scouting document talked about. There's a lot of information in there, but it's actually quite simple. Like, so it's like you manage to summarise a lot of stuff that we need to do in the games in a very simple language. And even our team talks, they're pretty straight to the point. Like, I think some coaches tend to just talk for sake of talking for them, but you seem to, well, from my chair, I'm not sure how the playing group feels, but it seems that there's not too much information, but enough to get players focused and know exactly what to do on a game day.
Yeah, it's a good point. I think we've all been involved with teams, water polo and other, throughout our careers, whereby you know that the coach has lost you, you know, throughout the team talk. I'm also aware that if you're having to have a long team talk immediately before the game, then you're stuffed up the 7 days prior or the couple of days prior. So, yeah, just getting that balance right, like I spoke before about the quarter times and half times, just making sure you get the right balance right, about enough information or too much. But by having these playbooks and the scouting documents prepared now, it means that a month out from Paris, we're not chasing our tail, whereby it's a 12-month preparation where people can learn the styles of individuals, learn the styles of other countries. And that'll put us in the best position to perform, you know, come Paris. I enjoy doing that work. You know, coaching nowadays, unfortunately, you know, there's a lot of administration to it. And I accept that as part of the role. But in my day-to-day, I need to get better at, you know, allocating time to do the scouting, to watch games. I watched two games today. Picked up one or two things from that. And hopefully those one or two things will help us, you know, as a group moving forward.
And since we're on the theme of coaching, and for coaches listening to this, when we do video as well, we never watch, this could be common sense, but we never watch the actual games. It's always little clips that coaching staff, Vedran, Andrew and Tim have done, important key examples where we need to get better or where we got beaten or stuff to be done well. So when we talk video, it's never actually just the whole game. And I know, Jimmy, you and I sat through a few video sessions that were just horrendous and you just lose it. But, it's you know, I'll give credit to you. You boys seem to get the right balance.
Sorry, Tim, I thought you were going to say something. So we've got a unique period coming up in terms of we've got two world championships in pretty quick succession and then another big tournament middle of next year. How are you feeling? Well, first of all, with the world champs in 9 weeks' time, is that what you said? So we've got 9 weeks until the Japan world champs. Will we see a very different team to the one that was at the World Cup? And then what do you think of the draw that you've got?
Yeah, firstly on the World Championships, I think we're really fortunate enough to play not only the upcoming two, but the one last year as well. So we actually play three World Championships, you know, in a shortened Olympic cycle. So we're very lucky with that. On the upcoming draw for these World Championships, look, they're always difficult, but it certainly could have been a worse draw for us. We haven't had too much luck in some draws recently, but as I said throughout, and I don't want to sound like a broken record, but we're happy to play everyone. Not because we think that we're going to beat everyone at this stage of our campaign, but we need to play them to feel what it's like to play the Greeks, to feel what it's like against the Spanish and the Italians. So I'm happy to play whoever it may be. But, yeah, this draw, you know, is a reasonable one for us. The way in which the lines or the pots worked could have been really unfavourable. But, I'm relatively happy with the draw and looking forward to these upcoming World Championships. In terms of the playing group, that's probably been our biggest change in the last 12 months. We've got a squad of 33 players now, which is a really big number.
How does that compare with other countries, like with the Greeks, the Spanish? How many would they be working?
Look, I don't know. I don't know truthfully. I know the Montenegrins had about 26 when we were there recently, so I'm sure they all have big squads. The challenge for us is, though, because we don't have as many activities on throughout the year, you know, how do you get enough exposure to all of those players? In the last 12, 14 months, 19 players have made their debut for the Australian men's team, which is a huge number. I don't think any other 12-month period would have had 19 debutants. And that's not that I want to give out caps. You know, to be honest with you, I had to work my backside off to get any cap that I did earn for the national team. The last thing I'll do is hand out caps just for the sake of I'm incredibly passionate about this team and being a former Shark, so it's not about that. But it's about trying to build something for the future for this sport. Absolutely, we're focusing on Paris and we want to do well in Paris, but we're also trying to build something for LA and also Brisbane after that. The team-wise, it's interesting for me, these AWL finals that start in the next day or so. A couple of players in these games, you know, how they perform may determine whether they continue in the squad. We have a number of players who have been given opportunities. Some have grabbed them and will continue and some haven't. And those who haven't, they're aware of where they sit and we'll move on without them if they're not. There's a few players who haven't played recently who played in Tokyo and also in Rio that are looking to come back and play, which would be exciting in some respect, but they also know that you know time's running out and they need to do the work. And it's also no surprises. There's a couple of players that will get citizenship soon, so they'll be also considered for selection. And we're looking at Sam Slobodin, the Des Moines centre forward, Milos Maximovic from Cronulla, and Jacob Mercer from Sydney Uni. So those three players will come available at some stage in the next few months for selections if they deserve it.
Nice. I guess that leads us nicely on to the AW finals, which start Thursday 27th. To start with, what do you think of the format of this year's AWL? First time in a long time that's been a very different type of format. There was the first phase, then that broke into a top six and a bottom tier. Then from there, they've now got the top four playing in the finals. What are your thoughts on that format?
I honestly think it was worth a try. I think one thing that we haven't done well with our sport historically is change and try and improve it. So I certainly won't talk too much tonight about, you know, whether I think it was the best format or the worst, but I think it was worth trying something different. A couple of things I spoke about is that I found that by having this top six, bottom five, the bottom five were out of the competition. So, you know, why would they continue to push for the remaining 6 or 8 weeks or it worked out? You know, I also thought about if we had a top five and bottom six, whereby the winner of the bottom six still qualified for, you know, the top six finals, where that would have been something to consider. And I know Water Polo Australia working hard at the moment to look at what, you know, the National League looks like for next year. So I'm sure that'll come into play. I mean, even this format for the finals over the next few days, and hopefully it doesn't end this way, but Saturday afternoon, if the results go as per the table, and I hope it doesn't work this way, but there could be a dead rubber. Mm. So, you know, hopefully there'll be some upsets and some interesting games in the first 2 days, meaning that day three really counts. But that's the risk. We're always trying to find formats that increase the, you know, quality games that the guys play. So I think this was worth a try. But for me, selfishly, when National League is played next year is probably of most importance as opposed to the format for me.
Because if you've got a World Championships in Feb and then Olympics, is that June, July?
Yeah, that's right. So the challenge we'll have is that, you know, there's talk about National League being played at the back end of this year, e.g. September through to December, or playing it next year, or playing, you know, split across the back end of this year into next year. The problem I have is if we play National League March, April, May, and the players are, you know, strongly aligned with their clubs during that period, it gives us, you know, reduced time leading into Paris. But I'm also very respectful of the clubs, because the clubs either support very directly or also indirectly the players. So there's some conversation over the next few weeks to work out how that'll look. But yeah, selfishly, you know, the quicker we can get all the players on the one training program, I think the better it would be for us leading to Paris.
And with this weekend in particular, we might start with the girls' tournament. Who are the big? Who, in your opinion, who are the big players to watch? And how do you see that side of the tournament sort of playing out?
Yeah, I think it'll be a really great final series, both the men and the women. I haven't followed the women's league as closely this year as I have in the past, but certainly watched some of the games. I know that the Fremantle team has had another great season, and well, you know, what a club. You know, they continue to prove themselves in finals, both men and women, historically, so looking forward to them play. They've certainly got probably, you know, four really big players. Zoe, the two American sisters, and Glencora, who's had another amazing season, and you know, I dare say is going to go down as one of Australia's great players.
Phenomenal.
I think between those four, they've scored somewhere in the vicinity of like 78 goals. So you know, they're the big focus of the Fremantle group. Sydney Uni, on the other hand, I don't think I've seen two better imports for the Sydney Uni women in Maud Meggins, Dutch, and also Anna Espar. I think between those two, they've scored 55 goals. So you know, Fremantle, really strong four players and a great goalie in Lil Hedges. Sydney Uni, two, you know, outstanding players, Izzy Pamp in goals, and some really good juniors. Queensland, on the other hand, have probably got the most you know, depth in terms of, you know, contribution of goals. They've got five or six players who have scored more than 10 goals, a couple of strong centre forwards. So I think they'll be a really good team. Missing a few of their key players from last year, but you know, they'll be good. And UWA, I think in for some people's eyes, a bit of the surprise packet this year. Obviously, Bronwyn Knox joined them, which is always, you know, strengthens any team. But a couple of the younger girls there, you know, doing a great job for UWA.
And with the Women's World Cup, the timing on that was a little bit later than the men's. They've only just wrapped up their phasing. So the women's team only got back in the country last couple of days.
Yeah, last Sunday. So I think it'll be a 5 to 6 day turnaround since they landed. And I know from our experience post-World Cup, we flew home on a Thursday night and the guys played Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And looking at some of them physically, we didn't recover from that trip, I think, for 3 or 4 weeks. And many of the guys were sort of chasing their tails. So pleasingly, the Stingers girls have had a little bit of longer leading. But that flight home from Europe doesn't get any easier. So there'll be some tired girls, you know, by Sunday night.
Man, you were out for about 6 weeks from it, weren't you?
I was gone. It took me – I didn't even play. I wasn't even playing. I was 10 days. I was gone. But yeah, like we had a few guys go down with sickness and really dragged out. So yeah, it was rough.
Maren, on the women's side, you've had a bit to do with a couple of teams. who are you looking forward to watching?
I'm looking forward to watching Miss Crosses, Rowena Crosses, who scored 34 goals. She played 10 games, only 7 kickouts. So I'm really looking forward to see her.
All right, which of the clubs, Matt?
Jokes aside. I watched Fremantle play Balmain last weekend, and they were quite impressive. So I'll probably go for them.
And on that, they didn't bring a full strength.
No, they were missing a few players as well, a few national players. So I'm going to be looking out for them. But
4 really good teams. So I think when you're talking before about the number of quality games that that you're trying to play, you look at those, the three games in the before the final, they should be really good.
Yeah, I think they'll all be really great games. I think tomorrow we start Sydney Uni Queensland and Fremantle UWA, so the Perth double will start off. But yeah, most times you can lead into finals. We'll talk about the men's in a moment, but you can pick a favourite quite easily. But I think this women's competition will be a really strong one. You know, most people are thinking Fremantle may be the team to beat, but yeah, there's 3 other opponents there that I think is really going to push them.
But with this format, you've only got to win a couple of games to get your chance in the gold medal game, and then from there,
absolutely
plays a bit of a part of it, anything does. So I think that'll be a really, really good tournament the next 4 days. And on to the men's. What's your thoughts on the men's finals?
Yeah, I'll be a little bit careful with some of my comments in terms of who I think will win, but I think in most people's eyes, Sydney Uni and West, seemingly the strongest 2 at the moment, closely followed by Drummoyne and Cronulla. If you look at Drummoyne, about 4 or 5 months ago, they were hardly filling a team. I know Blake Edwards and Dean were, scrapping around trying to figure out what they were going to do. So to come from where they were to make the top 4, I think is a really great result for them. And on their day, they can beat anyone, as this season showed. Cronulla, Vedran Cirkovic has done a really great job at Cronulla. He's got a real good balance of younger players down there. I referred to Tristan Glansing earlier, Marcus Berahulak, another young, really up and coming player for them. Milosh, I think they'll be competitive. But again, same thing. I think getting the top 4. It's a fair result for Cronulla, but in saying that, I'm sure they'll hope to push on for more. Sydney Uni, if you look at their team on paper, extremely balanced. See Billy and Reese joined them this year, plus Jacob, plus got Goran and Tom at centre forward, Anthony in goals. Jacob there is a lefty, so they're a well balanced team. But West, I think Andrew Nitzis won 6 National League titles with West, so he knows how to get the job done on the big day. That several of those players have done it before. So, it's a hard one to pick. I think most people's eyes are thinking Sydney Uni West, but, I'm really excited to see where the games lead to.
I was thinking about today and, you think everyone's going to think Sydney Uni West. Now, Sydney Uni's been playing as favourites the whole season and been producing. West and Des Moines seem to play really well when they're underdogs. They don't play well when they're favourites. And I reckon Cronulla, they've got a big centre forward as well. I reckon they potentially could be a sneaky upset.
Yeah, you talk about underdogs. I laugh about this with Andrew Nitzis. Yeah. He does it every year and does such a good job at it. It's like Mal Meninga with the Queensland team a number of years ago. It's used to drive you mad when the odds came out for Origin and New South Wales are starting favourites after Queensland winning the last 6 series. It's the same with Andrew with West that he does such a good job with them. He gets them to fly under the radar, gets everyone talking about Sydney Uni or get everyone talking about Blake at Drummoyne or whoever it may be. And then come the big weekend, they win another one. So, they've got some big players there, some big name players. Nathan's had a great season. I think he's topped the goal scoring. I think it's probably the interesting matchup for tomorrow, West Drummoyne, how Nathan's used. I personally think his best position is centre-back, and that's where he's played most of his career. In the last 12 months, we've used him everything. We used him on the left-hand side as match-up. We get him to start on Mandich a lot. He's played on the right-hander side of the pool, left-hander side of the pool, and played World Championships at centre-forward last year. So, Andrew, where's he going to start him tomorrow? Will he mark him up on Blake early on in the game, or will he start him at centre-back? And
playing makes Milton. Such a difference when you've got the right person at centre back, and the right person can depend on so many different variables in a game. But you're looking. I think it was last year when we were watching the finals, and Tyler Martin was playing with Drummoyne, and when he played centre back, their whole team seemed a lot more balanced. They just had a better balance to them in attack and defence when he was playing in centre back there, and just showed the impact that having the right player in the right position had on their overall balance of the team.
Yeah, I think they'll be conscious, a lot of coaches, that often you won't start your best centre back for the first quarter, at least for the first couple of minutes, because most likely there'll be an exclusion early on. So I'd be incredibly surprised if Nathan started centre back. Mm. But come the crunch end of the game, back into the third, in the fourth quarter, then I think he'll go to centre back and hopefully dictate defence for West and, as you said, control the defence and communicate what they do.
Well, you're forgetting about Richie Campbell, who can play centre back. And I was thinking about like Drummoyne without Lawrence and the goals. He's had a great season. So if he can shut the gates, it could be interesting.
Yeah, James, you mentioned before about up-and-coming young players. Mm-hmm. I mentioned Tristan Glanzinger, Marcus, Andre Grigorovic, who won't play in these final series due to his commitments with a USC college in America. But the fourth one of all the juniors is Lawrence Barker, the Drummoyne goalkeeper. I think in the last 12 months, I think he's probably been the most improved junior across the country. I think he's been probably the best goalkeeper in this National League. Obviously, Katsu from West has been incredible for them as well. But as a young goalkeeper, he's been really, really impressive. And it'll be interesting to see how he develops over the next 12, 24 months and where he lands with his water polo. But, he's certainly come of age and he's been probably really important rock for Drummoyne the last few weeks.
There's also been another good young junior coming through. Is it Daniel Maksayevic?
Yeah, Daniel Magasenik, a really interesting one, yeah. So Daniel is Victorian-based. Daniel is born 2006, so he played World Championships with the Australian team last year.
How old does that make him? Don't make me do the math on it.
Let's get married and do it.
So I used to how's your kid? Like 18 months?
So he's in year 11 at school.
Yep.
So Daniel, similar to Lawrence, has had a really impressive 12 months, a really natural athlete. The problem we have with Daniel is that understands an exceptional AFL player, he's an exceptional swimmer and also basketball player. So the challenge will be for us as a sport is to keeping him involved with water polo. Pleasing his father played water polo, so there's a family connection there. So Daniel at the moment's got he's just changed schools to one of the big private schools down in Melbourne. But hopefully over the next 12 months when his schooling starts to slow down and ultimately finish up, that he makes the choice to go with water polo.
Basketball, terrible for your knees. Terrible for your knees.
Agreed.
And then AFL concussions, they're getting worse. Yeah. I mean, terrible. So pretty easy choice in my eyes.
Yeah, but talented kid, James, really talented.
In all seriousness, how do we as a sport compete with that? And I know we've kind of started to see a little bit in the women's programs. If we look back 5-10 years ago when there weren't any other professional legs, I think we had the pick of the athletes. I think we had some phenomenally talented female athletes coming through. But now with women's sport and professional women's sport on the rise, you've got AFLW, cricket leagues, basketball. We're now competing for talent across females as well. But what are some things that we can be doing to retain that great talent?
Oh, it's a real challenge. There's no answer to it at the moment, and unfortunately the reality is that we're not going to be able to offer what AFL can offer at this time and possibly ever. The thing that I'm hopeful with someone like Daniel is that I understand that his love for water polo is quite significant. He knocks around with Ollie Purcell, who's the born 05, sorry. He's just started end of year 12 or started uni, so he's a really talented young goalkeeper. And Pavel or Paul Mucic, who's Slobodan Mucic's son, the three of them, I understand, spent a lot of time together down in Melbourne. They're real water polo heads. So hopefully the love and passion for the game is lends that to Daniel picking water polo as his sport.
Slobodan's son played for Montenegro as well, was that?
Yeah, so he has two sons. Yeah. One of them's based in Montenegro and played for Montenegro in the last World Cup. And his other son is based down in Melbourne, who played for Australia at the National Age Group Champion, the 16 World Championship last year.
Nice.
Exciting times. Just on, before we move on to the World Juniors, which we'll just cover off that in a tick, with the AWL, when you're out watching these games over the weekend, what are you looking for? What do you want to see your athletes doing? What do you want to do? What do you want to see from other athletes who are aspiring to get into the national program? What are things that both of you are kind of looking for?
For me, James, it's difficult in terms of I don't expect to watch the games and looking for how a player would play within the system, because whilst I can watch the game and figure out what extra man defence, you know, each of the teams are playing, I don't know what their specific tactics are for that game. So I certainly won't sit back over the weekend and, you know, challenge them too much on their ability to form a tactic. But the players know some of our key themes over the last 12 months, and doesn't matter who the coach is, what the game is. As an example, blocking is important. Yep. So if you're making your blocks, you know, that repeat sprint ability in terms of, you know, really good hard counter defence and then turning that into a counter attack. Yep. Shooting percentage is my bugbear at the moment, so I'm looking to see players who are converting their opportunities. I'll do my own stats throughout the next weekend on the key themes and pieces that I'm looking forward to. As an example, the centre forwards, that, you know, I'll be looking for a certain output from them. When I talk about output for them, I'm talking about number of goals scored and or exclusions earned and or penalties earned. And fourth thing for them is the distance on counter defence. You know, I don't want to see our centre forwards giving away, you know, over a body length break on counter defence. So they're the four main things I look for with centre forwards. I'm really looking forward to the games. And as I said, the games for some of the players will determine, you know, where they land from a national team point of view over the next few months and beyond.
Nice. Marin, anything to add to that?
Mate, for me, it's probably more just seeing them improve, see how strong they are in the water and just how they're moving. And I'll be probably paying attention to the work data as well, just to see how they're recovering and how they're handling the stress. So, you know, I'll be actually supporting all the boys anyway, to make sure, remind them to do recovery and all the rest of it. But yeah.
Yeah, probably the only other one, James, for me is that we've spoken a lot about our ability to defend one-on-one. So inevitably, most teams will play a certain amount of press, you know, throughout the weekend. So looking at how well the players can match up one-on-one. Again, doesn't matter what system you're coming from, what tactics the team's playing. You know, I'm looking to see how players can go, you know, defend one-on-one. Exclusions, both earned and also silly ones given. You know, they're all the things that I'll look at over the weekend.
And I guess it'll be interesting when you've got some of the guys in your squad come up against Billy's, the Reese, Jono Cottrell, guys who have pretty high water polo IQ, like they know how to take advantage of situations. So it'll be interesting to see on those one-on-one moments and also on the flip side how those players take the opportunities when they're put in front of them.
Yeah, I mean, Billy's had a great season again, but I watched him play a game 3 weekends ago, and one of our players who I'd spoken to quite directly about his, let's go with poor one-on-one defence, you know, Billy destroyed him. So it's a really simple conversation. You know, 6 months ago we spoke about your one-on-one defence, and as good as season as Billy's having, you know, we still want to see that, you know, national squad members be able to mark him one-on-one, and they didn't. So, you know, they're conversations that need to take place, and, you know, we need to make sure that they're getting better in that one-on-one facet of the game.
In last year's final, I thought a couple of the West players really sort of jumped a level ahead, so in particular Angus Lammy, Burns, both had great finals games. Who do you see being sort of having a breakout tournament this one?
Yes, firstly on Angus Lambie, I think the World Cup just gone was probably his best tournament for us. I mentioned before about centre forward output, and you know, for the majority of games, he did a reasonable role. He's got a lot of work to do from a centre forward technical point of view, but from an athletic point of view, swimming and gym wise, he's excellent. So looking forward to seeing how he goes at centre forward. Matthew Burns, he's been probably a real find for us in the last 12 months. And when I say find, he's been around playing for a long time, certainly untested internationally up until World League finals last year. But he scored 4 goals on debut against Spain, and we've probably been waiting for him to do the same thing since. But as I said to him, it's, you know, his role in the team as a right-hander player on the left-hand side of the pool is, you know, we don't expect four goals from him all the time. But, you know, making the right passes, you know, making the correct pass in extra man attack to the post, delivering the ball to centre forward when required. And to be honest with you, he needs to swim all game, every game, you know, and he doesn't get a choice in terms of, you know, resting. He's up and down, incredibly fast, and, yeah, he's a tough guy, so I'm looking forward to seeing how he plays.
And I'd imagine a right-hander playing on the left side, that often means that he's got to mark up on a right-hander.
Yeah, absolutely.
Top players playing on that side.
And that's that one-on-one defence piece that you know he needs to be really good at. I'm looking forward to seeing Jacob Mercer play, the left-hander from Sydney Uni. Unfortunately, Jacob injured his elbow in game one against Japan in January earlier in the year.
It was a handy game one.
Yeah, I think he scored 5 or 6 on debut, and unfortunately he's had problems with his elbow since. So it's only probably been the last 1 to 2 weeks that he's started a little bit of condition back. Incredibly, he's only a small player, but at his best, you know, fast swimmer, shoots the ball really, really well. He's got a little bit of short-term combination, but you know his ability to play with Goran, you know, he's looking like it gets better each day. So, yeah, looking forward to seeing how he goes in a pretty packed up Sydney Uni team.
Nice. So if you had to put who wins and why, you're allowed to answer that question.
I'll leave it with Marin and you two.
I'm going to go value here.
Okay, righto.
I'm going to go Drummoyne. Okay. Bit of value in the bat.
And why is that? What do you think?
I'm going to go reason for it is... I'm going to go young Lawrence. I think he's going to force teams to shoot their best. Like, they're going to have to shoot 8 out of 10s every time. And I reckon he'll get Drummoyne out of a bit of trouble. And I also think that, I think Blake will have a good finals.
Yeah, I think on Blake, Marin, I think, as I said, a lot will come down when you're playing against Drummoyne, and everyone knows that you've got to stop Blake. You know, it's no secret, so no one's going to take anything out of this podcast knowing that. Everyone knows that, but doing it's another thing. So his ability on one-on-one drive is better than anyone in the country. You know, his ability to get inside and both ways, inside on the right, inside left, and also post up and score goals. You know, we talk about shooting velocity. Like, with his shoulder, he's not going to ever shoot the ball at 85, 90 kilometres an hour, but... his ability.
He's not going to be happy to say that.
He knows. But his ability to score goals because of variation. You know, he reads the goalkeeper, reads the defenders, goes cross cage, plays inside. So, yeah, literally to beat Drummoyne, they've got to stop him. And, yeah, as I said, Lawrence, I think, he's had a good season, but can he back it up in the finals?
I think just on Blake and maybe something that he's doing the best in Australia as well, at advantage, and Slobo actually does it a bit as well. When they get a front water... just to play for their penalty, they're the best. Like, they don't rush the shot. Like, I think watching Drummoyne play Balmain a couple of times, Balmain had an opportunity. The pass went in, they were inside water, but they just tapped it on to score a goal. They missed instead of just catching the ball, and it would have been a penalty. And I think those guys are quite probably the best adapted to those rules.
Yeah, I think with West James, I think, as I said, Nathan's had a great year. How Andrew will play him throughout these next 4 days will be interesting, but I think he's had a couple of games where he scored big goals. So, he's played well traditionally in final series. So I think he'll be the one to try and stop for West. But as you mentioned before, Jared Gilchrist, he's had another good season. Richie's there, got a Japanese goalkeeper plus Adashi, who's an amazing swimmer and shooter. Plus Burns. There's some
Angus
centre forward. So yeah, big interesting games.
Should be a great tournament. Looking forward to it. Just quickly, you've mentioned a few of the great juniors that we've got coming through. So there is an upcoming World Juniors. They've just picked the side for it. And there's a number of players who have been involved in your program for almost over 12 months now. What do you think of the team that's picked? Who are some of the – you've mentioned a few of the players, but who are the top players there that we need to look out for?
Yeah, firstly on that group, Vedran Cirkovic, who's the national men's team assistant coach, has also been this Born 03 or now under 20s coach for a number of years. And he's had the group for an extended period. And I think that this group, more than previous age groups, has probably spent a fair amount of time together, certainly not in comparison to the European team. So I actually think they can do very, very well. I've spoken already about Lawrence and Marcus and Andre and Tristan. Will Valentine's another... promising young player from Queensland. So they've got a reasonable draw as well. I can't remember off the top of my head who they play in what order, but I think they'll do quite well. And, you talk about what the role is of a national age group program coach being, you know, Australian 16s or Australian 18s or Australian 20s players. And absolutely we want them to do well at the World Championships. It's important for the program and for the system. But selfishly for me, it's that, you know, how many players are we going to get from that particular generation? And realistically, if you only got one per age group, you know, born 2000, 2001, whatever it may be, then that would be enough to build a squad long term. But the thing that Vedran's done a great job is that already we've got Lawrence, born 03, play for the national team. Andre, born 03, already play for the national team. Marcus, born 03, play for the national team. And Tristan, born 03, play for the national team. I think I've got them all. So already that we've got four players there, I think it was, that have played for the national team. And that's the work that he's done to develop this, you know, somewhat promising age group or generation.
Very nice. Look forward to seeing that tournament. Maren, anything to add on that?
Well, not just played, they played well. It wasn't just, as Tim mentioned, it wasn't just they got opportunity to play well. And Marcus especially, he's had probably a bit more opportunity, but he's really had some really positive moments in World Cup.
So, Tim, just a couple of quick questions before we let you go. What are some of your biggest challenges of a coach, as a coach, and how do you overcome them?
Well, this would be a long answer, this one. Look, there's lots to it. I guess depend on which aspect of the coaching you look at. Probably the biggest challenge at the moment is juggling the players' commitments. And by commitments, I mean working full-time, training with us in the morning or night, training with their club morning or night, plus family, plus girlfriends, slash boyfriends, plus family. It's very, very difficult to try and get that balance right. The comment I made before about National League is that if National League's played at the back end of this year, it just frees up the time for us to be able to manage the players much better in terms of their sleep and recovery and train properly. So for me, the biggest challenge at the moment is around, I guess, managing, I don't want to say their load, but their, you know, their workload and their life. Second to that, my first comment tonight is around, you know, number of international games. I knew the situation of our program. I knew what the funding model looked like, so I'm not going to get on here and make excuses or cry poor. But the reality is that without increased international games, it's going to be challenging for us. So that's the biggest challenge at the moment. How can we get enough reps, enough, you know, quality international camps and competitions between now and Paris? We're working on it. I know Waterpolo Australia work incredibly hard trying to get sponsors to assist that process. Hopefully we can tick off those pieces.
And with that sponsorship model, if you do get that, what does that actually give you? Does that give you the ability to take teams overseas or bring teams over here, or does it not matter as long as you're playing those international games?
Yeah, I think both can work. I think in the past we've always looked at going overseas, but, you know, leading to the Tokyo Olympics, we're lucky enough to have the Americans at AYC in Brisbane, also the Croatians, the Japanese came earlier than that. The challenge would be at the moment is how clogged up the European calendar is with European Championships and World Championships and how far it is to come here. So finding, you know, a quality European team to come to Australia, and when they do it, will be a real challenge leading to Paris. I'm not sure that's going to be possible. We nearly had the Italians coming in December, but then they put on European Championships, so that won't happen anymore. So, yeah, both can work. I envisage that in the next 12 months it'll be us going to Europe as much as we can. After that, you know, hopefully we can get some teams down to Australia. But back to the money part, it's simply, yeah, and we sometimes confuse it, but, you know, increase funding or sponsorship just means that we could tour more and have more camps. At the moment, we've already have to cancel a couple of camps, which doesn't help. As I said, I'm not going to cry poor because I knew what we're getting ourselves into. But, yeah, some more international games would be a great help for us.
What's an idea of what kind of funding enables you to go overseas? Like, are you able to talk figures as to, like, what a European trip costs? Because if you think you've got to take, 13 athletes, four support staff for an international team, it's pretty minimal.
Yeah, I mean, generally you're looking at 15 players because, yeah, obviously with not just COVID but injuries and illness plus also experience and exposure, you want to take at least 15 on tour. And then we now tour with less staff than ever before, not through capability of the current staff. But so you're generally looking at 20 on a tour. I don't know the exact numbers off the top of my head, but it's pretty simple. You're looking at 20 players at, you know, $3,000, $4,000 for flights. Accommodation, at that time in Europe, extremely expensive. So before too long, three or four work tours, over $100,000, and you don't need too many more of those tours to eat a fair chunk of the budget.
Yeah.
I'm basically carrying the squad here. I'm multitasking, doing everything for this team.
They're just balls. That's all you're carrying, mate. What advice do you give to young athletes, or what great advice did you have when you're a young athlete coming through?
It's an interesting question, James. I'll probably talk to it not just in terms of water polo, but I guess life in itself. I had a long conversation with another coach today, and where we both kind of landed was that the most important thing for me is to be incredibly passionate about what you do. Like each day, I don't have a problem getting up in the morning because I love what I do. I've got a beautiful young daughter now who's 8 and a great son who's 5, and whilst they're too young probably at the moment to take on board all these life lessons that dad thinks important, the one thing I want to see from them is just them to find what they're really passionate about and go all in on that. When you talk about young athletes, it's certainly about finding what your passion is, whatever that may be, because when we're passionate about something, everything becomes far easier about your work ethic and your training and all the goal setting pieces. But if you're trying to do all that stuff with something you're not passionate about, you certainly won't go as far. So yeah, for me, that's the big piece. It's certainly the whole work hard piece, but what we're learning, particularly with Maren and Hayden's involvement, is that we also need to work smarter, because everyone can train hard, and any coach can write a program that can kill a player and burn them out. But how many coaches can write a really smart program? So yeah, that's more of a coaching piece, but the athletes, working smart as well.
I guess that leads me on to my last questions. What are your ingredients to success?
I guess that's a really multi-pronged question/answer. But I've always been really big on character and work. And even when I'm selecting teams, there's a certain amount of talent that we require. But the piece that's so important for me is character. I'm interested in character. I'm interested in quality people being involved in this Sharks group moving forward. It's certainly no disrespect to the current group, but are we going to be the most talented group come Paris? Probably not. Can we be the group with the best culture and best character come Paris? Absolutely. So they're the things I look for. I'm always watching, always observing, always monitoring that. I know who turns up early to gym. I watch who stays in after training. I watch the players who contribute, helping out with the staff. I'm looking at the players, providing feedback on the bench when others come out who have made a poor mistake. Multiple examples of how people can demonstrate good character, but that's what I'm really interested in. As a player myself, I didn't have a whole lot of talent. I probably based my game more on work, whether that's influenced my coaching, probably, but I'm also okay with that. There's certainly a lot of pieces. I think that we're encouraging the players to get a really clear understanding of what they need to get better at. I think as players in the past, we've thought about what the coach may think we should get better at, and we've guessed. But I'm trying to be really deliberate and direct with the players to the areas, so there's no confusion. If they happen to make the team, these are the areas. This is what we want from you. And on the flip side of that, if they miss the team, I haven't blindsided them. They know the areas that they need to get better on. They haven't done it, and as a result, this is the decision that we've made.
I got a couple of questions from Instagram. 3 questions. 2 I'm not sure about. 1's actually a good one. So first question. Is yellow or green your favourite colour?
Who's this come from, man?
So I usually don't like to call out the names. I'm not sure if I should call out a name, but okay. I think it's I posted a picture of you on Instagram wearing a Karen uniform, and the shirt looks probably a bit yellow and green rather than green and gold.
So I've had numerous discussions with Water Polo Australia, we'll go with. I love the green and gold, and I'm open to wearing a gold polo shirt, but I think I'm the only one. I actually loved the Olympics when we had the bright yellow/Australian gold polo shirt. At the moment, on game days, we wear white or green. For me, when you wear a white polo shirt, the opposition team can be wearing that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't like turning up to the pool and being in the same polo shirt as the opposition team. Yeah. So to answer the question, Australian gold, absolutely.
So green and gold, my friend. All right, this one here. Has he lost my number? I'm still available and coming off an M3 premiership. Now, this wasn't from James Salesen. It was obviously from his teammate. So I'm not sure how you're going to answer that. I guess there may be, is there any chance to make a squad from M3?
Very unlikely.
Okay, cool.
I reckon there's one bloke in that team to be
actually, there's probably one bloke there, probably.
G Woods.
All right, so this is actually a proper question. Should you go to the gym to help with strength in water polo? Now, before you answer it, the water polo fit person that wrote this question, as I said, I don't want to throw him on a bus with a name. He is, it looks like, I've checked his profile. He looks like a, I'll say, under 16 type player. He looks like he loves his water polo, and he seems he's from according to his pictures. So
you can answer this question after I finish, Maren. But for me, there's probably a couple of pieces with it. You know, why are we going to the gym? What's the purpose of it? Maren and I, even though we're good friends, we also have a professional relationship about his role and what he needs to do with this team. So, you know, he needs to make sure that he's meeting the objectives we want for the playing group. So I think there certainly can be a huge role played from gym work, but I also think it needs to be very specific, not only to water polo, but specific to individuals. I'll get you to talk in a moment, Maren, about the whole thoracic spine, grip strength, you know, rotation work. But I also feel that we can program in-pool strength as well. Again, the comment before, James, is that we're trying to do so much with our junior players. You know, what do you leave out? Over this next period post-AWL, Australian Water Polo League leading to World Championships, we'll continue with our 2 to 3 gym sessions a week with Maren. But we'll increase the amount of strength that we do in the pool. For us, that looks, you know, three main forms. Number one, med ball work, both not just vertical position but also horizontal and at 45 degrees. We'll also do a lot of work with the Cap 7 weight belts, passing, shooting, blocking and movements. And we'll also use the stretch cords as well. So I think in the past we've thought about strength only to be achieved in the gym. But I think that we need to think more about in-pool strength as well and how we can increase our strength in the pool via those means I mentioned before.
Yeah, it's good to hear your comments from water polo coaching point of view. My two cents, and I know I drive Tim mad with my kind of philosophies and always thinking deep and how to summarise what we do. But I think I messaged Tim the other day, simply, strong things are strong, weak things break. It's just so simple. So if you, and I'm just answering this question based on that, I think the person who wrote this question is quite young. I think getting into the gym as fast as you can or as soon as you can, you'll never regret getting strong. And I'll probably, the tip I will give to young players, don't worry about doing too much water polo specific stuff. Just get good at basic movements, squatting, pull-ups, push-ups, master those, build a good base, and then when you get to a certain age of 18-19, we can get a little bit more specific. But you don't want to leave it too late. I think what I learned from being involved in water polo, sometimes we just haven't built enough of a base to do stuff like power, to do stuff that's a bit more explosive, so it kind of held us back. And then from coming, you know, recently from Montenegro, and just even just in the background, we've got Olympic final between Greece and Serbia. The game is so physical, so you just got to be strong. And if you are playing a game of water polo and every time you get a wrestle feels like you're maxing out, well, it's going to be really hard water polo game. So you need to get to the point that you're not getting thrown around. You can manage the stress, and yeah, like we talked about earlier about fatigue. You want to be able to minimize the fatigue so you can make this decision. So that's my two cents worth.
Yeah, good comments.
Thanks, Tim. Thanks, Jim. Thanks, let's see if this pod beats. I think it was like, what, how many? It was pretty high.
It was about 500 or 600.
Yeah, it was a pretty famous. So I think 100 of those were just Tim, though.
Doesn't matter how we get it.
That's true. Thanks, Tim.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Bye.